The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service, the New York Times, and the Associated Press. First of all, an article from the Religion News Service that was published on April 11th and written by Alejandra Molina, entitled, Hate Crime Suspect Arrested in Vandalism of Los Angeles Mosque. Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Police Department arrested a man on suspicion of vandalizing a mosque in L.A.'s Koreatown. Surveillance video captured a man early Easter morning writing anti-Islamic hate words with a permanent marker on the outside pillars of the Islamic Center of Southern California. News photos show the mosque defaced with the words 222 Freedom USA and King 222 did this. Los Angeles police on April the 11th identified the suspect as 43-year-old Carlos Moran, who was unhoused in the L.A. area. Chief Michael Moore, who described the writings as motivated by hate, said the suspect claimed he was a king and appeared to be struggling with mental health issues, according to the L.A. Times. News of the arrest comes a day after L.A. enforcement and interfaith leaders came together at a news conference to condemn the vandalism that Omar Ricci, a spokesman for the Islamic Center of Southern California, referred to as an act of hate. The incident has pained the community, especially because it occurred during Ramadan, the holiest time of the year for Muslims, Ricci said. Ricci noted the stabbing of an imam who was leading his congregation in a prayer at a New Jersey mosque on April 9, as well as the attacks on worshippers at Al-Aqsa Museum Mosque in Jerusalem's Old City. But Ricci said, the attack was not just on this center or what's happening in other parts of the world or the country. It's an attack on our city as a whole. At the news conference, Moore pointed to the rise of hate crimes in the region since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. L.A. County's 2021 hate crimes report found there were 786 hate crimes reported in the county in 2021, a 23% spike from the previous year, and the largest number reported since 2002, with more than half of the crimes being racially motivated. Religious crimes increased by 29%, and the rate of violence was the highest on record. Jews were the most targeted. There are individuals out there that are trying to pull us apart, Moore said. It's important for us that we not just solve this case, to bring some assurance of consequences to this congregation and to people of the Islamic faith, but to all Angelenos that this is a city of inclusion, Moore said. Salam al-Marayati, president of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, said that thanks to extra security cameras provided under a Federal Emergency Management Agency program, the Islamic Center was able to capture this culprit on camera. Before, we didn't have that. Before, Muslims didn't feel they were part of our society, part of the system of justice, al-Marayati said. Now, because of the people who are here, who respond for justice, who respond against hate crimes, we feel that our Islamic Center is in a good place, regardless of what people like that coward was trying to do in the middle of the night, al-Marayati said. At least two people connected to the mosque expressed concern at the news conference for the person who committed the vandalism. Hurt people hurt people, one man said, saying it was important, especially during the month of Ramadan, to ask, what are we doing to help the hurt people heal? Another man said he was happy to see law enforcement respond, but hoped that if this individual is suffering from mental health, that we can readily identify it and begin to help. Al-Marayati said the Islamic Center of Southern California would be conducting town hall meetings after Ramadan to address how to be merciful while at the same time respect law and order and security for our community. Now an article from the New York Times, published on April 11th, written by Sarah Mervosh and Ruth Graham, entitled, Nation's First Religious Charter School Could Be Coming to Oklahoma. An Oklahoma State Education Board is weighing whether to approve the nation's first religious charter school this spring, potentially setting up a high-profile constitutional battle over whether taxpayer money can be used to directly fund religious schools. A small number of charter schools may be affiliated with religious organizations, but the proposed school, which would be run by the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Oklahoma City and the Diocese of Tulsa, would be the first to operate as an explicitly religious school with religious instruction. Charter schools are a type of public school paid for with taxpayer dollars, but independently run and managed. A decision to approve the charter, St. Isidore of Seville Catholic Virtual School, would almost certainly tee up a legal battle, something the school's organizers anticipate and welcome. With conservative justices now dominating the Supreme Court, St. Isidore's organizers hope their project will help propel a broader national movement to lower the barriers between church and state and to allow government money to be spent on religious schools. We are trying to motivate the courts to take up this question and give us a final answer, said Brett Farley, executive director of the Catholic Conference of Oklahoma, which represents the Catholic Church on policy issues and is behind the proposal. Members of the Oklahoma Statewide Virtual Charter School Board, a five-member voting panel approved by the Republican governor and leaders of the Republican-controlled state legislature, wrestled extensively over whether to approve the school's application. From the outset, board members noted the legal weight of the decision and discussed their options should they be sued. Two conflicting legal opinions from Oklahoma's past and present attorney general left them unsure of how to proceed. The relatively obscure board is under immense political pressure. The St. Isidore application has the support of Governor Kevin Stitt, who has argued that excluding religious charter schools is a violation of the First Amendment's prohibition on religious discrimination. At the meeting, the elected state superintendent, Ryan Walters, a Republican who is a non-voting member of the board, tried to rally the board to support the application. Characterizing opponents as radical leftists with a hatred for the Catholic Church, Mr. Walters urged board members to make Oklahoma a leader in religious freedom and in expanded options for school children. He added, "I'll stand by you, any kind of intimidation that comes your way." The board chairman, Robert Franklin, pushed back against the description of opponents who, during a public comment portion of the meeting, had included local religious leaders and a founder of a coalition for rural schools. "No disrespect to you, but I didn't hear a radical position," he said. In the end, the board voted 5-0 to seek more information from St. Isidore's organizers, including their analysis of why a religious charter would be constitutional. The board is expected to vote again on the issue later this spring. "I don't think it will be us who ultimately lands this plane," Mr. Franklin said. "It will go to courts to ultimately decide where that lands." Organizers for St. Isidore said that the school would accept students of all faiths or no faith, just as other Catholic schools in Oklahoma do now. If approved, the school, named for the patron saint of the Internet, would accept an initial batch of 500 students in kindergarten through 12th grade, starting no sooner than the fall of 2024. "We are taking what we have been doing in Catholic schools for over a century in Oklahoma and putting that online so that we can bring this content to the folks out there in the rural areas," Mr. Farley of the Catholic Conference of Oklahoma said. He said that while a religious charter school represented an innovation, the concept of government money going toward a religious institution was not at all exceptional. We do this in many walks of life, he said. We've got Medicaid going to Catholic hospitals. We've got FEMA relief funds going to Catholic charities. But the prospect of a religious school fully funded by taxpayers raises additional questions. When asked about admitting LGBTQ staff members and students, for example, Mr. Farley said that he could not comment on hypotheticals. He said the school intended to abide by state regulations while also maintaining its right to operate according to its religious beliefs. A broader approval of religious charter schools would apply to religions of all kinds, Jewish and Muslim charter schools, for example. But Rachel Laser, president and chief executive of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, said she worried that the Oklahoma case clears a path for the government to favor the majority religion. Nicole Stell Garnett, a law professor at the University of Notre Dame who has argued for religious charter schools and has advised the St. Isidore organizers, said that the underlying question was not about religion, but about whether charter schools were state actors or private actors, despite being publicly funded. Are they really government agents, or are they more like a government contractor, she asked, using the example of Lockheed Martin, a private company that contracts for the U.S. military. If they are private actors, there is room for them to be expressly religious, Ms. Garnett said. But the charter school movement sees itself as squarely in the sphere of public education, said Nina Reese, president and chief executive of the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools. She noted that charter schools must follow the same requirements as regular public schools do, such as hiring staff members and accepting students, regardless of religious background or sexual identity. Protection she fears would go away under religious charters. The legal question, whether charter schools are state actors or private actors, is central to another case from North Carolina, which the Supreme Court is weighing whether to take up. Should the question make its way to the Supreme Court, Preston Green, a professor at the University of Connecticut who studies educational law, believes that the court's conservative majority would be likely to embrace charter schools as private actors, opening the door to religious charters. I just can't see them saying no to this if they get a chance, he said. Now an article from the Associated Press, published on April 10th, entitled Cubans Seek Solutions and Solace in Centauri Amid Crises. Havana. From a two-room concrete home on the fringes of Cuba's capital, the rumble of wooden drums spills out onto the street. Neighbors gather at the door, and kids climb a fence to peer inside. They watch as dozens of Cubans wearing white and African beads make offerings at a bright blue altar consuming a room, asking for luck, protection, and good health. While nearly 70% of Latin America's 670 million people consider themselves Catholic, in Cuba, Santeria is the name of the game. A fusion of African religions and Catholicism, Santeria was one of the few religious practices to quietly endure through decades of prohibitions and stigma by the communist government. Now, as that stigma gradually fades and the country enters a moment of compounding economic, political, and migratory crises, the religion is growing in popularity and expanding to new demographics. Every day the religion grows a little more, Mandy Arrascaeta said, 30, among the throngs of people in his home dancing and making offerings at the altar to a plastic doll depicting the Yoruba deity Yemaya. Right now, Santeria in the country is a sort of bastion. Santeria was born as a form of quiet resistance among the island's black communities. The religion dates back centuries to when Spanish colonists brought in hundreds of thousands of enslaved Africans. While the Spanish tried to force Catholicism on these enslaved people, the Africans brought their own religions, mostly from West Africa, which they would camouflage by attaching their deities, or orishas, to Catholic saints. Cuba's patron saint, Our Lady of Charity, for example, blended with the golden deity Ocean. It would mix and mix. Through this Catholic virgin, they would seek to their African ocean, explained Robert Zurbano, a Cuban cultural critic. That's how the religion was able to survive. While there are thousands of orishas in Santeria, practitioners known as santeros usually worship only a handful, connecting with them through rituals and offerings. On one Friday night, Arasca Eta, friends and family splay out offerings of coconut and red Cuban pesos, emblazoned with the face of Che Guevara, sacrificing two chickens over bowls filled with rocks and seashells. In exchange, they ask for good health, strength during hardship, and even luck in love. It's something that's very Cuban, something spontaneous that we do, because we know the struggles we face in this country, said Aracaada. Millions worldwide are estimated to practice Santeria, though definitive numbers, especially in Cuba, are hard to pin down due to the religion's informal nature. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom estimates 70% in Cuba practice some version of Santeria or similar African-based religions. What is clear in the altars dotting homes across the island and the many Cubans in Havana cloaked in white, worn by santeros their first year after converting to represent rebirth, is that Santeria has captured the Cuban consciousness. Following the Cuban Revolution in the 1950s, Fidel Castro dismantled religious structures and expelled the priest who criticized his government. Religion, famously described by communist philosopher Karl Marx as the opium of the people, was strictly prohibited. Catholicism, highly dependent on meeting in churches and on hierarchy, withered. Meanwhile, Santeria practitioners pulled from the same tools they used to survive in earlier centuries. People did believe, but you couldn't say anything about it because it was politically prohibited by Marxism. All that did was strengthen Afro-religious faiths in very close circles, Zurbano said. They would keep it a secret, keep their religiosity to themselves. Zurbano's family would quietly perform rituals inside their home and divide ceremonies that once would last a week into smaller, two-day chunks to avoid alerting authorities. Some adherents secretly wore religious garb under street clothes. Katrin Hansing, an anthropologist in Cuba for City University in New York, said Santeria endured because of its flexibility and because of its perceived utility in assuring good health in exchange for offerings. In the 1990s, when Cuba's main ally, the Soviet Union, collapsed and the island spiraled into economic crisis, many Cubans found solace in Santeria. The Cuban government has accepted it, but the officially authorized ceremonies remain practically deserted, as islanders prefer celebrations in more informal settings, such as one's home. It's incredibly resilient as a religious system, Hansing said. It's so decentralized, and it allows the individual believer or practitioner to make it what they need it to be. Santeria is once again seeing a surge and expanding past historically impoverished black communities. Araza Cateda, a white Cuban and a member of the LGBTQ community, found refuge in the religion when he was 12. Once an evangelical Christian, He said he felt rejected by members of that religion for being gay. "I never fit in that religion," he said. "I like that Santeria doesn't obligate anyone to fit into a model." As a teenager, he began putting glasses of water around the house as offerings to Orishas. His mother, Maritz de la Rosa Perdomo, would throw the water out, saying there was no place for religion in her home. That changed 3 years ago when he joined a wave of Cubans in embarking on a journey to the U.S., traversing the perilous jungles of the Darien Gap. When he went missing for several days in the jungle, the first thing Perdomo did was put out an offering. "I began to beg for my son. I said I needed to hear from him, to know that he was alive. I was begging with my whole heart," Perdomo said. When she received a call from him shortly after, she decided to join the religion alongside her children. A religion that used to be, dominantly practiced by descendants of Africans or people of African descent has now become a multiracial religion in Cuba, Hansing said. Santeria has grown enormously. But for each practitioner, Santeria means something different. For Araz Katea, who nowadays travels between Cuba and work in Florida as an Uber driver, Santeria is a spiritual experience. For Perdomo, it's a way of seeking good health. But for both, it's a way to stay connected with the other, an ocean away. "Today, the entire country is dressed in white," Perdomo said. Our last article was published by the Religion News Service on April 10th, written by Adele M. Banks, and entitled, "Can a Teacher Put John 3:16 in Email Signature? District Says No, Her Lawyers Say Yes." Attorneys for a Virginia high school teacher are challenging school officials for requiring the teacher to remove a Bible verse from the signature of her work, email messages. Under the recent directive, the teacher had for years, since the time she was hired by the district, included John 3:16. "For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life," with her signature. In their request made last month, lawyers with the Christian legal group Liberty Council said the Loudoun County Public Schools directive amounts to religious and viewpoint discrimination. They said her colleagues are permitted to include other kinds of private expression from secular viewpoints in email messages, including the use of preferred pronouns. The district does not prohibit all personal expression by teachers in their email signature blocks, but only religious expression, because it says the Establishment Clause precludes the school district from any communication that could be perceived as the school division's official endorsement of any particular religion, the lawyer said in a letter to the district. Yet this endorsement reasonable observer test was explicitly rejected by the Supreme Court in its Kennedy decision. In the Kennedy versus Bremerton School District case, the High Court decided, 6-3, in June, that it was constitutional for a high school football coach to pray on the field after football games and be joined by students in the prayer. Liberty Council also cited a unanimous Supreme Court decision last year, Shurtleff versus Boston, that the city unconstitutionally refused a conservative activist request to fly a Christian flag on a city hall flagpole to mark Constitution Day, when hundreds of other requests to fly flags of different types had been approved. Upholding a teacher's private speech in the workplace is not state endorsement of any religious message the teacher may choose to convey, the lawyer said in their request. It is instead a rightful protection of that teacher's fundamental free exercise rights. They also cited the Supreme Court's decades-long position that teachers do not shed their constitutional rights to free speech or expression at the schoolhouse gate. In response to the Liberty Council letter, Acting Superintendent Daniel W. Smith said occasional use of the district's email address for personal reasons is permitted if it does not interfere with the teacher's responsibilities to the district. But Smith said his understanding was that the teacher is not including religious quotes in only her private correspondence, but also uses these religious quotes in her communication to students and their parents in her capacity as an LCPS employee. These communications are not private expression, but rather constitute school-sponsored speech, bearing the ostensible endorsement of the school division, particularly when such emails reflect the lcps.org email domain. Smith reiterated that the district's stance concerns avoiding a violation of the First Amendment's Establishment Clause, which bars government from favoring one religion over another. To be clear, LCPS's determination is not based on any particular religious viewpoint, he added, and LCPS would take a consistent approach, as it has here, with respect to any religious expression incorporated in an LCPS employee's email block of which it becomes aware. The American Family Association stated on April 10 that it considers the district's position to be unfair censorship. The hostility of the secular left toward the Christian faith is chilling and clearly indicates where so-called progressives want to take our nation, said Ed Vitagliano, executive vice president of the conservative organization. They want to drive our faith into the shadows and punish any and all public expression of it. A teacher's work emails are official governmental communication and therefore cannot legally contain religious content, countered Rachel Laser, president and CEO of the Washington-based organization. As is customary for them, Liberty Counsel is taking court cases out of context in order to distort the First Amendment to remove the separation of church and state. Loudoun County Public Schools has a duty to ensure that school officials are not abusing school resources to impose their personal religion on others. And that includes official emails sent from school district email accounts. Lawyers for the teacher said she proposed an alternative verse from Proverbs, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." They said it was also rejected because it was from the Bible. We've run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.